Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. All right. Normally on Fridays, I go in, I look up, my news articles. I'm doing research on what I want to talk about. And there's always enough. There's always enough to talk about on Fridays. This week is the first time that I've had to actually pick and choose and cut out articles and news sources that I wanted to talk about because it's just too much. It was crashing my browser with the number of tabs that I have open. And so obviously, look, it's been 2 weeks since I've done a Friday episode. I'm going to focus mostly on what's kind of progressed over this last week. Much of the week before, we've kind of covered in other episodes talking about Iran and all this stuff. So keeping in the spirit with the Friday episodes, I'm going to talk about what's happened the last week. I'm probably missing some stuff. You might be like, Corey, XYZ happened this week. And that's very possible and that's okay. The point of these Friday episodes is also to talk about things that you may not have heard about. To touch on the things that are happening in the background, stripping away our rights, accelerating fascism, and simply focusing on the war in Iran, for example, is not going to accomplish that. You know what's going on there. So anyway, with that, let's jump in. This first section that I want to talk about is what I just mentioned, the loss of safety nets and the loss of rights that many people are experiencing. And that because of this flooding the zone, because there's so much happening all of the time, because 90% of the media is focusing on, war and Epstein files, which are all obviously crucially important. But there is this steady march of legal battles happening, of executive orders, of the breakdown of the Constitution that is threatening to deny people even more than has already been done of their rights, of their livelihoods. And of the safety nets that they need to survive or live anything approximating a comfortable life. So this first one I want to read, this is from the Fort Worth Report. It's titled, Banning Islam, Deporting Muslims Discussed at Fort Worth Church After Primary Elections. Political and religious leaders suggested deporting, jailing, or converting all Muslim people to eradicate what they perceive to be the threat of Islam in Tarrant County in Texas. Or I should say Tarrant County and Texas. The ideas were debated in a panel discussion Thursday night during which a Republican legislator suggested state lawmakers remove federal protections for the practice of Islam by classifying the faith as a political system rather than a religion. We could basically say, and this is a quote, in the state of Texas, we get to define what a religion is, and Islam is not a religion protected under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. That was State Representative Andy Hopper, who represents Wise County, northwest of Tarrant. Now, does what this person says have any impact on the wider, legislative agenda? Are they actually able to make these changes? And if this was just a regular person or a regular online conversation or something, it would just be another day. But in this case, we're talking about legislators. We are talking about lawmakers. And this type of conversation, picking and choosing what religions constitute religion and have First Amendment protections and which ones don't, is terrifying. And it would be no surprise if this sort of thing gained steam in more places, if local and even federal authorities started to put in place this sort of racist, oppressive, fascist agenda and putting it into law. Okay, this next one is in LGBTQNation.com, and it's an article highlighting that Idaho, along with 7 other states, passed some legislation, I guess, a measure. I don't know if I would say it's legislation. It's a measure asking the Supreme Court to overturn the 2015 decision to legalize same-sex marriage. It passed in a 44-26 vote on Tuesday. The measure argues that the decision establishing the constitutional right of same-sex couple to legally marry is at odds with the Constitution of the United States and the principles upon which the United States is established. Now, many people make sure to point out that this doesn't have any legal grounding. This does not put a case before the Supreme Court, though they also note that the Heritage Foundation, they're looking for the perfect opportunity to do just that. That at some point, there will be a perfect case that they can use to try and overturn same-sex marriage in the United States. And it is what they are aiming to do. It's in Project 2025. And certain Supreme Court justices like Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito have repeatedly signaled that they are eager to overturn Obergefell, which was the decision. So along with the last article, threatening Islam, this one is threatening same-sex marriage and LGBTQ couples. Here's one from Beltway News. I believe this is a Substack source, but it's talking about how Trump administration threatens eminent domain to seize warehouses for ICE detention. It's just, again, another way that the government is trying to go against what the people want, what the people have asked for. They're struggling to get people to agree to sell their warehouses or space for them. And so instead, they're threatening to just take them by force. Lustra.news talks about how there's a such thing as the Kids Online Safety Act. You may have heard about this before. It went away and came back a while later. And of course, the name makes it sound lovely. It makes it sound helpful and innocent and like it's doing the world a favor by protecting kids. This act has several sketchy elements to it. It would require adults to verify their identity before being able to access any sort of mature site. Many critics say that this would make it harder to report actual child abuse online. Any platform hosting mature content would be legally forced to collect government IDs, credit cards, face scans from adult users. Essentially, it allows for businesses and the government to create a database of people who are accessing these websites. It opens the door for choosing what types of materials can be censored online, what types of things can you be required to register simply to view. It doesn't just have to be about sexualized content. It could be about anything that they consider mature. Just like books have been banned, so too could websites in the future. It is, again, another aspect of Project 2025, the shaming of those who don't live by Christian values, when in reality, obviously, we have a government that does not care about the safety of children, seeing as how they are protecting pedophiles. Okay, and then from Business Insider, it says millions of student loan borrowers are kicked off of Biden's key affordable repayment plan in a surprise court reversal. So while this one might not be so much about constitutional rights, it is about that sort of safety net aspect. And this is something that I expect to see increase much into the future. We've heard time and time again, and I grew up on this idea, that Social Security wasn't going to be around when I was older, partially because it's unsustainable, and partially because, as we're seeing now, the government is making attempts to cut safety nets all over the place. I expect to see impacts to Medicare and Medicaid, Social Security, unemployment, for example, food stamps. We've already seen major impacts to, and now here is just a reversal of a plan that Biden had put into place to help people afford to pay back their student loans, which, funny enough, as we're talking about it, I just realized that that might include myself. So that's something that I need to look into. All right. Well, that's those types of things we're going to keep paying attention to. It's something I'm going to particularly keep an eye on because these are the things that affect the everyday person. Not that all of the corruption and problems don't, but these specifically are efforts that target people who are already in the most need for support. And I think that's one of the most maybe overlooked aspects of collapse, is that the people who will be hurt by it first are the ones that are perhaps most vulnerable, that need the most support from the government. All right. From CNN, Kash Patel gutted FBI counterintelligence team tasked with tracking Iranian threats days before the U.S. strikes, according to sources. Now, I said when I started the episode that we weren't going to focus much on the war in Iran, and we're not. I have two small things here. And the reason that I bring these up is that they just kind of show the ineptitude and the lack of planning and the chaos and confusion that surrounds this government when it comes to their rash decisions like these. So, for example, with this article talking about the task force, it says, just days before the United States launched a major military operation in Iran, Kash Patel fired a dozen agents and staff members from a counterintelligence unit tasked with monitoring threats from Iran, according to two sources familiar with the matter. They were ousted for a simple reason. Each was involved in the investigation of President Donald Trump's alleged retention of classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago estate. How insane is that? Just days or weeks before, what you should have known was to be a major conflict with this country and understanding the vast importance of this type of intelligence, you fire them in a retaliatory effort because they investigated Donald Trump previously for something that was completely justified. As a result, Patel hamstrung the Washington, D.C.-based FBI counterintelligence unit, known as CI-12, which handles cases ranging from mishandling of classified documents to tracking foreign spies operating on U.S. soil. The dismissals have added to concern inside the Justice Department and FBI that counterterrorism and intelligence investigations in the wake of the military operation in Iran could be hampered by a mass exodus of national security experts, according to sources familiar with the matter. Later in the article, it talks about how the manpower has been cut in half. It refers to the fact that Iranian-backed actors on American soil have a penchant for assassinations or kidnapping plots. The Justice Department in the past has worked to thwart those, but they have been decimated by waves of firings and resignations since the beginning of the Trump administration, and experts worry that despite their best efforts, the department could be unprepared to manage future attacks. Wild, wildly incompetent. Going along with that, there's a video here of Pete Hegseth evading a question on whether U.S. is at war with Iran. He says, the lawyers will debate all of these things. We have great lawyers and we'll make sure it's all buttoned up. Call it what you want. One commenter mentioned how, if Iran had done this to the U.S., I think we would most certainly call it a war. And the fact is more that it's not that he doesn't know if it's a war. It's that he doesn't care. One minute he's calling, you know, he's making sure to call it the Department of War, talking about how we're going on the offensive. War is our new strategy. The next minute, he's talking about how, I don't know if I'd call it a war. Call it what you want. It doesn't matter. And this is, of course, likely to avoid legal problems associated with having to go through Congress to declare war, et cetera, et cetera. I approve nothing of the wars that we've waged in the past, under Obama, under Bush, whatever it may be, right? But at least in those instances, it felt like there was some level of competence and professional responses that made you feel at least a little bit like the ship was being steered at the helm by somebody who knew what they were doing. This just makes me feel like the captain of this ship is a drunkard, which I guess we're talking about Pete Hegseth, so he is anyway. All right, moving on. Trump says he won't sign any bills into law until the Save America Act passes. He's basically threatening to hold up all legislative attempts until they pass the Save America Act. The Save America Act is the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility. This is the one we've talked about, already been approved by the Senate, that would require proof of American citizenship in order to vote. He said, I, as president, will not sign other bills until this is passed, and not the watered-down version. Go for the gold. Must show voter ID and proof of citizenship. No mail-in ballots except for military, illness, disability. This was in a Truth social media post. Now, it's seeming like this thing's not going to pass. They would have to break the filibuster, and it's seeming like Republicans, not enough Republicans, I should say, are willing to do that. So the filibuster would force Democrats to speak continuously on the Senate floor to delay a vote on the bill. But if they cede the floor, Republicans could circumvent the need for a 60-vote majority and pass the measure with just 51 votes. And I'm sorry, I misspoke a minute ago. I said that it's passed the Senate. It is not. It has passed the House. It needs to pass the Senate in order to become law after Trump would sign it. Continuing on in the article, it says the Save America Act has ample support from House Republicans and has already passed the lower chamber three separate times over the years. Democrats, however, have pushed back on the measure, claiming it would pose challenges for registered voters and potentially inhibit people from heading to the polls, which is, of course, what Republicans want. Well, on that note, Donald Trump also tells Republicans the Save America Act will, quote, guarantee the midterms. There's no even trying to hide it, right? It's just blatant out in the open. Pass the Save America Act if you want Donald Trump to win again. It's the only way I can win. He said it will guarantee the midterms. If you don't get it, big trouble. The people are demanding it. Every time I go out, Save America, Save America. We want the Save America Act. That's all they talk about. They don't talk about housing. They don't talk about anything. That's what they talk about. And if you send it up there, you will win the midterms and you will win every election for a long time. For now, it looks like we're in the clear in regards to this, though, of course, that is not to say that something sneaky won't be done. I won't be all that surprised if, you know, something comes into play with blackmail or whatnot and people end up flipping. We can hope not, but we will find out in the next couple of months leading up to the election. Lastly, on the election front, Donald Trump won't say if he'll send armed agents to the polls, so Democrats are suing to find out. The fact that's even a conversation is incredibly distressing to me. I'm kind of surprised he won't just say it because he's just saying everything else, basically. But if he's not saying he won't do it, and even if he did say he wouldn't do it, I wouldn't necessarily trust that. But if he's not saying he won't, then that leads me to believe that he will, or at least he's keeping the cards open to do it. Sending troops, sending ICE, whether it's armed agents, other federal agents, to polling places is some real fascist banana republic type stuff. You probably heard that Kristi Noem, who was the head of the Department of Homeland Security, was sacked by Trump. And imagine this, quote, and this is from theindependent.co.uk, quote, "We can't find it. Noem battered over $143 million in no-bid contracts to operative tied biz that doesn't have headquarters or website." So to go into this a little bit, there's a couple of articles here that I'm going to share. This company that she injected taxpayer money into, which in total I saw was more than $220 million, was no older than 8 days. As it said here in the headline, there was no headquarters, no website. This firm apparently subcontracted with another firm operated by her spokesperson's husband. So $200 million of taxpayer money fed into some brand new company that no one can tell us anything about. Where did that money end up? Where is it sitting? Kristi Noem herself is in a bit of a pickle. According to alternet.org, Trump sets off GOP shockwave by contradicting testimony Noem made under penalty of perjury. There was a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on Tuesday, March 3rd, followed by a House Judiciary Committee the next day. And this is, again, according to that same $220 million ad. Trump says that he did not approve her $220 million spend. She claims that she did. He says, "I never knew anything about it." In a game in which Donald Trump is going to throw people under the bus, it's pretty clear who's going to win that. And it's no surprises that he would be willing to throw his own people under the bus who have done nothing but pledge loyalty to him. But the moment that they don't serve him in the way that he needs, they're gone. Okay, let's finish up the episode. I want to talk a little bit about Doge. This was a big part of the news at the beginning of Trump's term. Obviously, Elon Musk coming in, doing vast and massive amounts of destruction to, you know, internal government departments, infrastructure, etc. There's been depositions with Doge staffers, multiple of them, and they're all these seemingly pretty young kids that Elon hired to be scapegoats for him, and that's what these depositions are. So in one of these, for example, it says Doge lead in deposition details how he emailed documents to his personal device to then send with Signal using auto-delete. He's essentially removing classified documents that he should not have had access to in the first place. And I say classified in that it contains sensitive material, private user information, social securities, those types of things. Removing those, emailing them to his own personal accounts, and then using social media platforms to send them. This is apparently a breach of several federal laws. And another whistleblower claims that ex-Doge member claims he took Social Security information into their new job after they left Doge. So it's just a breach of all of this data, my data, your data, I guess if you're in the U.S. Meanwhile, in another deposition, it says Doge staffer responsible for flagging grants for DEI struggles to define DEI. This guy's whole job was to flag these grants, cause them to be defunded. And I've talked about in these episodes before how I've known several people in my personal life who were affected by research grants that were defunded. His main job was to find the ones and flag them who were related to DEI in any way. And yet in his deposition, he's unable to even define what DEI is. it's clear watching the video that it's not that he doesn't know what DEI is. It's that he knows if he actually tells the truth about what DEI is, it will discredit his whole effort. It will be damaging to the whole cause. It will put him in personal peril. So instead, he plays stupid. Man, I guess the theme of this episode is that our government is being run by not just dangerous fascist criminals, and that is a big part of it, but it's just also being run by incompetent idiots. And the mixture of those two is clearly unsustainable. All right. Thanks for being here. Talk again next week.
Neulich bei der Versicherung.
Bahnhof.
Bahnhof, Bahnhof.
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 Sie verstehen bei Ihrem Berater nur Bahnhof? Zeit zu Ergo zu wechseln, denn da verstehen Sie nur.
Einfach.
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 Einfach. Einfach.
Einfach.
Einfach.
Einfach.
Denn wir machen Versichern einfacher. Einfach, weil's wichtig ist. Ergo.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.